Welcome to Season 3 of the Leadership Educator Podcast, your source for knowledge and expertise on facilitating leadership learning. Passionate about leadership education? Want to expand your resource toolbox with practical strategies for teaching, learning, and program design? This is the podcast for you. If you haven't done so already, please hit subscribe so you'll never miss an episode.
My name is Lauren Bullock, Assistant Professor of Instruction at Temple University.
And I'm Dan Jenkins, Chair and Associate Professor of Leadership and Organizational Studies at the University of Southern Maine. And we are both thrilled for today's episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast.
Surprise, we don't have any guests. You're just stuck listening to us converse. We wanted to lead into the next series of episodes based on some conversations we've already had with featured guests this season.
Yeah, so the purpose of this next series of episodes is to help leadership educators prepare for the heightened level of uncertainty as we're coming into the fall. So whether you're teaching that online leadership course for the first time or you're facilitating that, you know, student affairs based program or activity, or, you know, thinking back to some of the amazing guests we had in our last season, it was just outstanding to see how so many different types of leadership educators pivoted and transformed their programs for some type of virtual or remote or online space. Simultaneously, we're dealing with so many different types of challenges as a nation, as a society, thinking about the different online movements and social movements and the Black Lives Matter movements. And there are so many things that leadership educators sometimes have this responsibility to respond to and to create space for and to facilitate dialogue around. These things can be a little bit overwhelming.
Yeah, you're right. I think we've had some great conversations, both you and I, in just doing research and preparing for this show, as well as from some of our guests. I know one of the things that comes to mind is, you know, this, we all thought this would be temporary, especially in March when things started. And that only, I think I've let go of what I think normal should be. And we're now in this space of, okay, so what should remain virtual and what should return to in-phase, to in person or face to face. Like I think activities should definitely return to in person, but the knowledge consumption should remain virtual, especially as students have proved that they're able to acquire that knowledge independently, as well as, you know, take the time that they have in person to focus on interactivity. That's not a new concept. It's part of what has long been the flipped classroom model, right? And a part of that model is, you know, just making sure that the time you have, you're using it for more engaging work instead of, you know, lecturing or just talking or even to some extent, like, you know, a limited discussion. I think one of the other things I've noticed is just the having the confidence to use the tools that are available is super important right now. In having different conversations with others, you know, I know I've shared the example of my colleague who will be 71 at the end of August, and she's one of our leaders in our department in terms of online education. And so it's really moving from this, what used to be and what was normal, to this, you know, and this came from our conversation with Scott Allen, you know, how can we do this well? And I think at the time this was teaching and programming in virtual settings. And I think now this is this almost permanent hybrid model we have, like what do we do virtually and what do we do in person? So, you know, that's one of the great takeaways I had from the season. Dan, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think perhaps we're going to be more prepared than ever, or we're going to get more prepared than ever to flip our classrooms. You know, certainly if you're transforming your course into an asynchronous space, or you're transforming your program into an asynchronous program, that's going to look a little bit differently. But if you're going to be utilizing some type of web conferencing, you know, such as Zoom, you know, I think that it's a really, really good idea to see how active you can make those class meetings. You know, I'm thinking about looking ahead to my fall schedule here. I'm teaching classes I've taught before for years. One is an introduction to leadership class that's going to be primarily with undergraduate students. You know, freshmen, sophomores, usually a few juniors from different majors mixed in. And then as well, our graduate seminar, which will be a mix of students in our master's program, as well as some new doctoral students that are coming into our program. And, you know, I feel certainly lucky and privileged that I've been teaching synchronously for, you know, 5 or 6 years now. But one of the things that I've learned is the Zoom fatigue is real. So if you can flip the classroom, like put that content, even if you're going to record, you know, a lecture, I'm not saying that you have to, but any content that you can put that is that students can consume on demand, like do that, because you want to utilize that time that you have those students on in your class for activities. And those activities are going to look different. You can utilize the breakout functions, but you know, students are going to need structure, a lot of structure. And with that, some opportunities to do the same type of work that you need them to do. They need to have group projects. They need to reflect. They need to do small writing, you know, whether it's on a collaborative document or you say, hey, get out a piece of paper, or hey, you know, bring some art supplies with you today. We're gonna do a little bit of drawing, you know, get a pack of colored pencils or even a couple different markers, you know, whatever it is that is going to, you know, get you back in that space where you're comfortable, that brings you some joy, the type of joy that you had when you were teaching face to face, but understand that like this is a different how. You know, we keep talking about Scott Allen, but that was one of the things that he really said that I feel was profound, was it's the same what. You know, your content hasn't changed so much. It's the how. It's how you deliver it, it's how you engage your students, and how you provide that opportunity, you know, for a brave space, a safe space for dialogue, for discussion. It's just going to look a little bit different, and we're going to have to be innovators in that space and how we take some of our tried and true activities and experiences and transform it for a virtual leadership learning.
I love the ideas that you shared. You know, you're talking about that, the knowledge consumption and the activities online. I totally agree. I read an article on, I think it was Inside Higher Ed, and they said, like, you know, the 5 or 6 simple things that you can do this fall. And one of them was the simplicity of breakout rooms. And I remember being at ALE, the ALE conference, and where one session they made everybody a co-host and you could bounce back and forth between rooms. And I love that, because as we think about the social nature or replacing the informal social nature that our students have had, whether they're a few minutes early and they're just hanging out in front of class, or like, how can we recreate some of those spaces so that they can continue to build relationships in this virtual platform? I think about those breakout sessions, and can we do one class where, you know, that's the standard setup? But it's something as simple as just putting them in a room for a few minutes together at the beginning of class and having them, you know, respond to a this or that question. You know, they still have those desires just as they would in a in-person classroom. And they almost have a heightened anxiety not knowing what to expect from these online classes. And so those are like little simple things that we can do. I also think that with the knowledge consumption moving online, we can go back to it, adding a few more topics or adding a few more readings or adding a little bit more content than we have in prior years. I know that I've, you know, been to numerous sessions where, you know, I've read, you know, in preparing for your semester, write down everything you want to talk about and then cut that in half. And I think now I can maybe revisit that list and maybe it's cut it by 35% instead of a full 50%. I'd like to take the approach that, you know, here's what I want to get to. And if we have time, we've got these other things that I definitely want to talk about. Or even I've done in the past with my students, I've done like demo topics and said, okay, this is what I'm thinking about for future semesters. Now that you've gone through this whole class, let's do this. And they've still, I mean, they're still learning and they're still engaging with the same material, and they get even more engaged if they think they're previewing it for another class. I definitely use that tactic. I shouldn't say tactic, but it was helpful for them because they got to see the information in a new light. And then it was helpful for me because I could get some real-time feedback once they'd gone through the entire class about what that project looked like. It just made it a really valuable experience. I think the ultimate thing we both come to is well, COVID-19 and moving online or moving virtual has shaken up our new normal. I think the other part to that is some of the challenges we've had around just connecting to one another and connecting in civil spaces. You know, we've seen the most civil rights action this year. We've seen more civil rights action this year than we saw in 1968, which I think was one of the high points of the civil rights movement, right? And so while we have the added layer of people dealing with their personal health, we also have this added layer of, you know, how are we talking about diversity and inclusion? And also, what action are we taking around diversity and inclusion? And we'll hear some of those themes throughout this season 3. One of the things Dan and I talked about and didn't have a fancy way to bring up was, you know, we I shared with him a New York Post quote that I saw where a CEO of a large organization said, you know, I want to talk about D&I, but I don't want to make a mistake and end up ruining my career over it. So I'd rather be quiet than say nothing. And as Dan is a white male, I'm going to put that out. People don't know already. You know, how does that resonate to you? What does that make you think? I mean, I have a different perspective, but I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, no, and thanks for outing me, Lauren. So
you're welcome.
So no, it's an interesting topic, and it's something that, you know, I remember exploring this phenomenon as a master's student at the University of South Florida. I was trying to decide what I wanted to do my master's project on. I was actually studying political science, a comparative political science, at pursuing, you know, that particular program. My master's thesis advisor, she's like, you're going to go into a doc program. She's like, you can write about anything you want. It can be loosely related to politics as you want. I actually looked at instructional technology as one of the topics, that. And then I wanted to know if others had had a similar experience that I had as an undergrad, which was whether or not the diversity of the student body that you found yourself being a part of as a student leader, if that contributed to your leadership effectiveness or not, or you basically your self-perceived leadership effectiveness. And Dr. Suze McManus said, well, let's do that one. She's like, I don't know about this online teaching stuff. I think it's a fad, which is kind of funny. Who knows where I'd be if I had chosen that project. But what I ended up studying was I surveyed, you know, several hundred student leaders in the state of Florida and asked them questions about, you know, how many students are from a different ethnic background or a different race, or I can't remember exactly how it was worded, than you in your student organizations. Got some information about that, asked them about what those experiences were like in high school, and then asked them to kind of self-rate their leadership, you know, effectiveness, but also like asked them point blank, like, how much do you think the diversity of your student organization contributed to your, you know, ability to be effective as a leader? Because that was something that I know that I experienced as an undergrad at Florida State, was that being able to be around so many diverse others. It was a very, very, I think it was one of the top 10 most diverse public universities in the country at the time I was an undergrad. And so, and it turns out it does. One of the things that I did as I was preparing to do the literature review and learn a little bit more about that topic was learning about, you know, what is this intersection of diversity? And, you know, that was the terminology that was used. It was very generalized as diversity in the education literature and in the college student experience. And I started to find all of this literature around, like, basically, like, you know, throwing mud on the face of, like, having a diversity day, or, like, you know, or looking at, you know, February being Black History Month, or, like, diversity being a one-off. It needs to be something that's integrated throughout the curriculum. And that wasn't an idea that I had heard before, you know, and so I started to think, okay, so if we're going to, whether I'm going to teach politics, which was my first teaching gig, was teaching state government and local government and American government, or not shortly thereafter, you know, leadership, what are ways that I can integrate diverse thoughts and perspectives into the content that I'm going to provide? And so while I grew up as a Jewish man and all my grandparents were Jewish, that was a lens that I brought, while certainly at face value, you look, hey, that's a white male. Not, you know, and whether I would share that part of my identity varied depending on, you know, my comfort level. Although I was part of a Jewish fraternity, it wasn't always something that came up. But when I reflect on the Holocaust and other types of anti-Semitism and things that were part of the stories that I heard growing up, that was part of my experience, which differed greatly from some of, you know, my white male peers that were coming from a Protestant background or what have you. This idea of having a voice, not being afraid to integrate these topics or have conversations about these things, I think got easier over time. I think that sometimes it was looking for that wow factor with certain activities with respect to, I'll just share like one quick example of an activity that I did, and then I want to hear what you have to say about what I've been sharing for the last few minutes, Lauren. But I remember I think it would have been a seminar in college teaching class that I took in my first or second semester in my doctoral program, and everybody had to facilitate an activity, and one of the students in the class facilitate an activity on diversity that she had learned at a diversity seminar that her workplace had done. And it was called something like diversity bags. And what you did is, if you look at like the, if you were to Google like elements of diversity, you would find like a wheel that showed like the primary elements like gender, you know, and race. And then it gets, you know, it gets more and more broad, or it gets more different layers of diversity, from things like disability, age, you know, things of that nature, socioeconomic status. And so what you would do is you would put different types of elements of diversity in like four paper bags, and participants in the activity would pull one element from each of the four bags. And the way that you would do it for college students would be, you know, you could get a combination of like, this is a 19-year-old female who is Muslim and is in a sorority. Or you could get, you know, any combination of those different types of elements. It could be, you know, an African American who is a graduate student who has a physical disability and was brought up by a single mother. Things of this nature. And so what you would do is, that was the only information that you would get. And then you'd go back into like a pair or a trio, and you had to create a name for this person. You had to create like a little story about this person. You know, and that was just like the first step. And then everybody would share the name that they created for this person and the story that they came up with in their head about this person. And then you would, okay, in the next round, you would give them this profile sheet. And it was like, what do they do for a living? Like, what's their family like life? What do they like to eat? Like, all of these things. And again, it's all based on these four elements of diversity that you provided them. And then one of the final stages of the activity was, okay, now pass this sheet that you've created to your left or to your right. And then, and this was like the kicker, I want you to underline or highlight anything on this that might be considered stereotyping.
Wow.
And that's when students started to like, the eyes opened up and like the conversation just got real. And then we would say, hey, raise your hand if you had at least 5-6 elements of stereotyping, 7, you know, and then we would dive into this conversation about like, what are the implications of this? Like, you were given 4 pieces of information, like, you know, and one of the things I, you know, was fishing for was like, okay, you know, if you're going to be looking at job applications one day and you just see somebody's name or just these like really, really basic elements, like, you know, what are the implications of that? But, you know, for me, it was like, how can I make student, like I must have facilitated that activity 30 times because of how powerful it was. And some students are more keen on it than others. They're like, hey, I see what you're trying to get us to do, but sometimes not. And so, you know, for me, it was always like, hey, it's okay to have these types of conversations, but it's not without some type of risk, or it's not easy. And now, you know, after teaching for over a decade, like, they're a little easier just because I've put myself out there to have these conversations and to do professional development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you said a lot of interesting things. Like, my first thought is, when you talked about your identity as a Jewish man, I think about the activity I do in my class where I show my students a diversity wheel. And I tell them, you know, today we're going to talk about your diversity. You're going to tell me how you're the same and you're different. You have to, and you're, they break into small groups, and as a part of their group contract, after they talk about their goals, and after they write their standards, I say, okay, tell me how you're diverse. And invariably I get a group of students and they say, we're all white. And I'm like, you know, wonderful first step. And in looking at the diversity wheel, it gets you to think about like, are you in state or are you out of state? Are you a freshman or are you a senior? And, you know, and I share, I said, thank you for like being direct and being open with me about that. But also, let's get outside of just thinking about our race and let's think about these other elements. So, you know, usually I have someone who is from another state or is from like a rural part of Pennsylvania, and living in rural Pennsylvania is a complete 180 than growing up in the city of Philadelphia or even across the bridge in New Jersey. And so once we have that, it's like there's this collective sigh of relief, like, okay, so I can be in this space and I can safely be in this conversation around diversity, and I can think outside of just this norm. And I know that there's at least 30 other people in this room that are experiencing something that's similar. And then once we get there, it's this other level of conversation, which I'm so surprised that I have to have, but they're kind of like, well, we get it, diversity, inclusion. We've always been around it. What they don't get is, how do I engage my supervisor when they're not doing it? And that's such a big change. Like I was, you know, professionally raised that you listen to your supervisor, you do what they like, you go to work, they tell you what to do, you go home. And for our students, they're like, well, I'm going to work and what you're doing isn't aligned with my values. So I don't know what to do. And I think that's a really drastic shift. And my hope is our leadership educator friends are moving into that space, like assessing what their understanding is, but then also giving them tools for how to manage up and how to, you know, what do you do when your leader uses, you know, a racial slur, or what do you do when your leader makes, you know, a comment that puts down or stereotypes another group. Those are real situations. And I don't know that everybody in college is really having that conversation. I picked up a technique. I go to all of our IDEAL's our diversity area. I go to all their trainings. And one of the techniques I picked up was, you know, asking a question like, well, what did you mean by that? Like, what do you mean that, you know, all people are X? Or, you know, it's interesting you say that, that hasn't been my experience. You know, and so using language like that and teaching student that those tools, like, well, that's, what do you mean by that? And almost like feigning ignorance. I found those two things to be really helpful and powerful, and overwhelmingly in my student evals, I get that feedback. I also too, I share with them areas I'm not comfortable in. So before I have this diversity wheel activity, I always say, you know, and I've said this before on our show, I love our trans friends. I don't know enough. And so like this summer, I've been working on reading more so that I understand that community better. But also this is an area where I don't fail, but I'm just not as comfortable in as I, like I'm an African-American woman. I'm comfortable in that space, navigating those conversations. In the trans community, I'm constantly learning, talking to educators who are researched and familiar with that space. And then as information is coming out, I'm trying to learn. But I think part of me admitting my own vulnerability helps students to then feel like they too, because if I'm modeling it as a leader, they feel like, you know, now I can say I don't know enough about X or Y or Z. And it's in this space, in this community we have created, we've established that we're learning together. And I think, you know, that's something that's overwhelmingly come up in our conversations. And I think those are, you know, it's useful for moving forward. It's just surprising thinking about the comment, the initial post of the CEO at this large organization saying he's scared to make a mistake, knowing that I feel like our students are prepared, maybe more prepared and more vulnerable than someone of that stature. So we could probably talk about this all day, but we just meant for this to be a preview for season 3.
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting. I mean, it's the worst thing you can do is not talk about it, mm-hmm. you know, but I do think that, you know, in response to that article, it's like, well, what if I say the wrong thing? What if I'm afraid? I mean, it's that anxiety and that risk, that vulnerability that you have to have. You have to be okay with to engage in the conversations. And are you going to make a mistake? Probably, you know, can you put yourself out there and say like, hey, like, you know, I don't know as much about this as perhaps I should, but I'm willing to learn, you know, yeah. And if you see something that's not okay, like, you know, it's that whole, like, if you see something, say something,
yeah.
You know, and hopefully you've got an advocate somewhere in the hierarchy of your organization that you can find as an ally to bring up, you know, some of these instances of racism or what have you. I'm not saying it's easy. And as leadership educators, there are some opportunities that we have in our classrooms to model some of this behavior.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, if not us, who?
Yeah. I think we do have that responsibility. I also think, like, I liken it to if someone said, oh, you said, hey, you know, I want to be a leader, but I'm really scared to go ahead and do that. We wouldn't say, oh no, sit back and be quiet. We would say, okay, so here are some tools. Here are some things you can read. Here's something you can watch. Here's someone you can talk to. So like, if you don't know, it is no longer enough. And this conversation isn't going away until a substantial change and systemic change has been made. So it is challenging. Leadership in general is hard, but I think the more knowledge and resources that you have, the more comfortable you feel with your decisions, knowing that they're well thought out or knowing that you've accounted for as many stakeholders as you possibly can.
Yeah. And, you know, and we're not all experts just because of, you know, where we came from or what we look like. I think that's been some of the most interesting conversations I've had over the last few years. You know, I have attended some professional development programming at the U.S. Holocaust Museum and Memorial because I wanted to learn more, not only about the history of my people, but how to facilitate conversations around this topic that are meaningful within leadership education spaces. Equally, I've been in conversations with, with diverse peers, whether they, be from Latinx communities or African-American communities that say, look, just that have said point blank in conversations. And I really appreciated their being vulnerable and being able to say something like this that said, hey, just because I look like this doesn't mean I'm an expert in how to have conversations yes. around some of these issues that affect people that also look like me. And that has been, that's just a great thing to, it's a great dialogue to engage
yes,
in.
Yeah. So. And I think the best thing we could do is model that we're all still learning and also model that just like leadership research is changing. I note all the time, like trans research is changing. Like I had a friend who was like, she, I don't know if she was being flippant or ignorant, but she made this remark like, I don't know what all these letters, I don't know what to call people. And I'm like, whoa. Like, just like we're learning more about our African-American history, we're also learning more about the history of that community. And just like they get the space to unearth information, we get that same space as well. Like we've had dominant narratives for so long, we're all kind of collectively breaking our own bubbles. And so it's but I also think thinking about it in that mindset makes it a little bit easier for you to slide in, be comfortable and say, I'm learning and practicing and taking action and kind of doing what I know best. I feel like we could talk about this all day. But we, during the season, we have these conversations with others, and we want to invite everybody to continue listening and supporting us. We've had a great run, Dan, right?
That's right. So yeah, as we were preparing for this episode, I was scanning through my Gmail and found, it has been pretty much the anniversary, 1 year of that initial reach out. I had solidified the funding from, the Association of Leadership Educators to do this podcast project. And looks like it was July 30th. I made myself vulnerable and said, hey, Lauren, and reached out about this opportunity to do this. Just, if you go back and listen to some of our first couple of episodes, you can hear a little bit about how Lauren and I met and some of the ways we just kept bumping into each other at different types of professional conferences, usually around the topic of leadership education. And it has been a fun run. It has been a fun run for sure. And I've certainly learned a lot about myself and a lot about Lauren, a lot about teaching, and we've been able to have some amazing conversations with some absolutely fantastic people over the last year.
Yes, this is probably one of the more meaningful projects that I've worked on. I've learned a lot just as a leadership educator, but also had a lot of opportunities to ask folks questions that I didn't think I'd be able to ask. And we've been so fortunate that all of our guests have been eager and excited to join us and have been very, complimentary of the platform and how it's changing the community. And, it's we can't do this without them. And it's been a blessing to just, be able to do that work. And, our conversations have reached thousands of people in our community. Well, hundreds of people, but thousands of times in our community. We know people are listening to multiple episodes. But I think in order for us to continue, we need for our listeners to share suggestions. And so I think we say it in every episode, but there are ways that you can contact us to say, hey, are you talking about this? Are you thinking about this? I keep asking people in my network, and which is wonderful, but we also want to make sure that we're inclusive of voices that might not be heard because they're not connected to one of us.
That wraps up this episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast. And so, one of the things that we think about as we reflect on the work we've done together, and particularly this season, is how we've been doing this podcast remotely via Zoom since the start. And some of the equipment that we looked at getting right off the bat was equipment that you would record a podcast in the same studio or live, but we knew that wasn't going to be a luxury that we had. Who knew that, looking forward and reflecting on that this is pretty much how, even The Daily Show, the daily social distancing show, everything is being recorded remotely, and so we're following suit with that, and certainly keeping our 6 feet of CDC social distance.
Absolutely.
So With that, we invite you to follow us on Twitter. So I'm at Dr_leadership and Lauren is at MRSLAURJB. That's Miss Lore JB. We encourage you to listen to the full episodes as they're released, as we can only share a fraction of the amazing stories that we share and that our guests share. You can find the episodes wherever podcasts are available. And we also encourage you to subscribe and rate us 5 stars, as the more you rate us, the easier it is for others to find us.
We would like to thank the James M. Cox Jr. Institute for Journalism, Innovation, Management, and Leadership within the Grady College of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Georgia. The support was facilitated by Dr. Keith Herndon, William S. Morris Chair in News Strategy and Management.
And our wonderful theme music was composed, performed, and mixed by Dr. Matthew White, trumpeter, composer, and educator, and he's currently the Associate Professor of Trumpet, Coordinator of Jazz and Commercial Music, and Director of Ensembles at Coastal Carolina University. You can check him out at www.mattwhitejazz.com. Matt, thanks so much for sharing your musical genius with our audience.
And finally, thank you to the Association of Leadership Educators. Check out what the ALE has to offer at leadershipeducators.org. We hope you listen as well as share with your leadership friends. Thank you.